This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Emily Gale is the co-writer of Elsewhere Girls, which is inspired in part by Australia's first female Olympic gold medalist, Fanny Durack. Hello, Emily.
Good morning.
Hey, firstly, Emily, you should explain to us what Elsewhere Girls is about.
Well, Elsewhere Girls is a novel for roughly 10 to 14-year-olds. And it's a time slip, which your listeners may be familiar with, a bit like playing Beatty Bow. And it, not only is it a time slip, it's also a body swap. So we've got two characters, a 13-year-old called Kat, who lives now in Sydney. And then the other character is Fanny Durack. And they swap places and live each other's lives.
So did you come across the person, Fanny Durack, and think, well, I would like to include that person in a story, or were you looking for a swimmer to be able to put in there?
We were looking for forgotten women of Australian history. Mm-hmm. And my co-writer, Nova Wheatman, she came across the photograph of Fanny Durack and Mina Wiley at the Stockholm Olympics. It's a photograph which is actually of three people. It's supposed to include Jenny Fletcher, who won bronze for Britain, but often you'll find it in Australia cropped out with just Fanny and Mina, which I think is very funny. We just had a little bit of a dig into both of their lives, and we weren't quite sure which one we were going to write about at first, but it was Fanny who came through for us with a story that made us think, oh, yes, now she's got to be a book character.
So it could have been a female scientist. It could have been a female runner. It could, but wasn't yes. necessarily going to be a swimmer.
That's right. Although both Nova and I are very keen swimmers. You know, there was that element to it as well. We knew we would be doing our own laps and thinking of the story in our own, you know, little training sessions. So that helped a lot.
We'll take a look at the life of Fanny Durack and the research that you did, but we'll also take a look at the idea of the significance of putting strong female characters into books as well and why that's important. We'll do that in a little bit, though. So when you were taking a look at Fanny Durack, what was it about her and her life that you felt was significant for this story?
Well, first of all, the fact that, you know, she lived over a pub with her many siblings. She was in the middle, but she had two older brothers, two older sisters, and then she had a younger sister and two younger brothers. So a big family, which is a challenge for a novel, but, you know, lots of material to work with there. Also the fact that, you know, she lived under over a pub. She wasn't from a wealthy family, so she didn't necessarily have access to the facilities that other girls may have had. By contrast, Mina Wiley came from a swimming family. Her father was a champion underwater swimmer and plunger. And he had taught his children to swim from a very early age. So she had quite a different upbringing compared to Fanny. They were friends and rivals throughout their careers. Fanny, unfortunately, she died in 1956, but Mina went on to live till 1984. And she was quite the character.
Is the other thing that makes it a great comparison between now and when she was swimming were the difficulties as a woman of being able to just to compete?
Absolutely. I mean, at the time that they were swimming in carnivals and competing, there were no men allowed whatsoever to watch the women compete. I think probably the exception would have been Mina Wiley's father, Harry, because he owned Wiley's Baths and was very involved in the swimming scene. And he was also keen on mixed bathing, which was not allowed in those times. So it was very, very separate in those days. And the feminists of the day were really keen on this idea of it being separate and men not being allowed to watch. And they were so keen on this, in fact, that they didn't want Fanny and Mina to go to the Olympics at all. So they really faced a fierce battle to even go to the Olympics in 1912.
What I found bizarre, well, mind you, the whole time is bizarre about what women can and can't do, was that they weren't allowed to do freestyle either. They were only allowed to do breaststroke.
Yes, so that's what really Fanny and Minor excelled in at first. And the freestyle came a little bit later for them. But Fanny was absolutely wonderful at it. After the Olympics at the carnivals, they would often call it the Durak crawl as well. The girls who were looking up to her, because she was a mentor to girls for years after the Olympics, and didn't get to go again, of course, which was very sad. But yeah, she was wonderful at the crawl.
What was it that what were they wearing when they swam at that time?
Well, woolen suits were the order of the day. So I can't quite imagine what they would have felt like, but probably very heavy. They did also have silk suits, but when silk suits were involved, it was very important that they wear their robes right to the edge of the swimming pool. And then sort of jump in very quickly before anyone could see anything, you know, untoward. So, dealing with slightly different problems, although it has, of course, come up in the Olympics again that women have been criticised for not wearing the correct items and even fined in the case of the volleyball team, fined for not wearing small enough bikini bottoms. So I'm not sure quite what's happened with that, but we seem to have gone the other way.
Emily, tell us about the character that you've set in the present day and the difficulties that she finds going back.
Well, she comes from a very sort of different life because she's got a scholarship at a rather nice school. But her family can't afford to send her to this school. So it's very, very important that she keeps up this swimming scholarship. And she's finding the pressure of that to be very heavy indeed. And she's 13. She wants a bit of freedom. You know, it is that age when you start to think, now, is this a decision I would make for myself? Or what do I want to do with my life? So she ends up going back to 1908, which is a very rude shock for her. I think the housework will come as a shock to the readers as well. They do spend an entire day on the washing, which Kat, the character, is absolutely disgusted by because, you know, her parents can barely get her to unpack the dishwasher, let alone wash the sheets out the backyard. So there's that to get involved with. She does like the freedom, though, of, you know, she's a little bit older when she's in 1908 because Fanny was a bit older at that time. So she does get to have a bit of an adventure, being a bit of an older teenager and just, you know, trooping off wherever she wants to go. So it's quite the adventure. But also Fanny Durak goes forward in time to live her life. And there's a lot of comedy there as well in the book.
Hello, Ken.
Oh, g'day, Trevor. I'm 50 metres away from Fanny Durak's grave right now. It's in Waverley in Sydney, Waverley Cemetery in Sydney. And the interesting thing is it's the best grave in that whole section. It's a big, solid piece of granite that's polished up, and even though it's raining right now, it'll be washed clean, and it's just astonishing.
What do you know about it, Ken?
Oh, also that she held every world record from 100 metres to the mile concurrently, all at the very same time. I think that was during the, from 1912 through to about 1916, somewhere around about there. So she was just totally dominant.
That's significant for the time as well, isn't it, Emily?
That's right. And look, there's a wonderful interview with Minor Wiley where she makes sure that everyone knows that after that, she had all the records and she kept them for quite a while. So, yeah, they had this lovely rivalry. But yes, Fanny Durak did dominate. And the lovely thing is, I think, for any young swimmers, is that she wasn't always dominating. She wasn't always the fastest. She became the fastest. Minor says in her interview that Fanny was training all the time and Minor, you know, couldn't be bothered. She was much too lazy. But Fanny Durak was very determined.
Ken, thank you for telling us about it.
Thanks, Trevor.
All the best. Emily, when you're doing these types of books where you are fictionalising a real person, what are the difficulties in doing that?
Well, of course, you want to be so respectful and you want to do them proud. And so you do so much research and you find out things that are never going to be in the book in a way, but they do form, you know, you making this character, come to life for the reader. So, you know, we went to Sydney Nova and I, we're both from Melbourne. We went to Sydney, we went to the National Library, and we got out the archives, and that was fascinating. You know, they're very strict there. They weigh the box before they give it to you, and then you have to be very careful looking through all the old newspapers and postcards and all sorts of things in this archive box. And then they weigh it when you bring it back, which is quite a sort of nerve-wracking moment, thinking, God, have I accidentally put some valuable item into my bag without, you know, thinking. But yes, you just want to do them proud, I suppose. Yeah.
It's part of that, though, with the research, as you said, you may not use all of the information, but it helps develop the character so you understand what the character may or may not do.
That's exactly right. I mean, we found out that, for example, when Fanny was a younger teenager, she had won competitions for something called cakewalking. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but it's funny walks. So she'd entered, you know, this competition and won it, and that was in the newspaper. And then we managed to read that, you know, she did have this fantastic sense of humour, and, you know, she did not let anyone take advantage of her. When she went on tour to America, she was asked to perform a particular swim, and she didn't want to for some reason. I'm not quite sure what the reason was, but they were adamant she was going to do it. So Fanny jumped in, did a bit of a splash around, and got straight out again. And she was not going to be bossed around. So when you find out things like that, you think, okay, well, that's definitely character forming, isn't it?
Hello, Hugh.
Hello, how are you going?
Good, Hugh.
Hey, I seem to have a lot in common with this subject, and I'd love to buy a copy of this book for my 8-year-old son.
Oh, okay. But that's, and we'll talk about that in just a little while, the significance for young men, too.
No, but Van told us he'd love it. His cousin, Anna Zobel, is a Penguin children's author writing for exactly the same age group.
Okay.
She's got this rich character in her first book, Little Jim, that flips back 100 years. She buggers up the spell, basically. The swimming aspect. I mean, obviously, I never met Fanny Drack, but I was a bit of a personal friend of someone who competed at the 1938 Commonwealth Games in the backstroke. We weren't doing that well in the swimming, so she came sixth and became a public figure in her own right. Her name is Margaret Whitlam.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And Margaret was splendid. No one had a bad word to say about Margaret, but she always tended to point out, you know, that she'd done something of national standing before Gough ever did any national standing.
Nice point. I've got to move on, but thank you. Emily, with the idea of flipping, whether it be through age or through centuries and time, what is it that gives you opportunities? What is it that you'd like about writing that type of book?
Well, I always loved to read that kind of book when I was young, and particularly between sort of 10 and 14. I loved time slip books. I think because, you know, what a lot of writers want and what a lot of readers want is that experience of living someone else's life. And so, you know, in a body swap novel, that's what's happening to you. You are actually walking in someone else's shoes. You are seeing the world from a different perspective. And, yeah, that's what I love about it. And I think it's particularly good at this time. You know, Kat in the book is 13. That's a great time to do it, isn't it, to see life from someone else's point of view.
And it is also good to show the differences in life between that time. And you may consider that young people have got it easy now, but it is also good at taking a look at how it may not have been easy back then, or it could have been easier in some ways if you go back to the early 1900s.
Yes, we definitely wanted to show that, look, some things were impossibly difficult for women especially. They really had a fight on their hands. But also not necessarily saying, hey, kids, you've got it so easy now. It was so hard back then. That's not really the message we want to send. But just that, you know, there were women who came behind you who fought very hard for what the opportunities that you have now. And so carry on that fight, you know. Carry on Fanny Durack's fight and keep going.
We'll go back to Fanny Durack in just a sec. But on that, do you have to be careful that when you're writing this sort of book that you don't get preachy?
Definitely. And from the start, Nova and I said, right, we want this to be an adventure. We want it to be fast paced. We do want there to be lots of historical detail, but we don't want it to get bogged down in historical detail. So the main thing is the adventure and them both being swimmers and both being passionate about it. So you do, of course, no one wants to preach to children. We want them to keep reading books.
Yeah, but if you have a strong enough character and if you research it well enough, then it's the strength of the character that will come through and you don't have to be preachy.
That's right. I mean, kids are, they don't need to be preached to. They are very intelligent. They can pick up exactly what you want them to pick up and more. So, yes, we hope they love the book.
Graham, hello.
Good morning, Trevor. Good morning, Emily. So you're a swimmer. How does swimming and the writing process fit in with you?
Oh, well, swimming has been essential, definitely to this book, but also I think every book, because you need as a writer those moments where you are completely calm and not worrying about anything else apart from, for me, you know, breathing. Am I breathing? Am I kicking? Right, got that. And then the thoughts can start to happen about how to solve this problem in the book. And there's nothing like that sort of satisfying exhaustion after a really good swim. And, you know, the fact that you've also solved a problem in your book at the same time. So, yeah, really important to the process.
Did you, being a swimmer, then does it give you a way of being able to connect with Fanny as well?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why with the life she led, you know, she would have left school at about probably 12 or 13. And, you know, then she was working in the pub and helping her mother and doing all sorts of boring household duties. And so I can't blame her for escaping to Coogee to swim 3 miles a day. I think that's exactly what I'd be doing. It is an escape. It's lovely. When you're in the water, you're just absolutely free. So, I don't blame her for that.
Hello, Robin.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to say that Fanny Durack was the patron of the swimming club when I was a little girl. I used to swim for Clovelly Ladies Swimming Club at Coogee Aquarium.
Oh, how wonderful.
When we were presented with our prizes, Fanny must have been at one of the presentations. I can't even remember where. It might have been an RSL club in Clovelly, and we might have been in the church grounds of the church place. I don't know. But we were presented with our prizes when we swam by this very tall, white-haired lady, and I had no idea who she was.
Oh, yes, she was a great mentor.
When you take a look at that, Robin, how significant was it that there were strong women who were swimmers and were probably looked up to by young people like yourself?
Oh, well, it probably wasn't very significant to me because I was about 9, I think, when I was being presented with prizes.
Yeah.
I swam well when I was a child.
Yeah.
I kept on swimming. I lived at Coogee, so I kept on swimming. And even now, at my great age now, I swam with a group of aqua aerobics people. But I can't do that at the moment. But it's been a great life being a swimmer. So, I mean, it must have been wonderful for Fanny to have done all those things under extreme difficulties. And I know I swam at Wiley's Baths and won a medal from school, and I can remember being at MacGyver's Baths too, so all those Coogee places where Fanny would have been swimming.
Yes, wonderful.
Robin, thank you. When you take a look at the places that she was swimming and the swimming that she did, how significant were the places themselves, Emily?
Well, Wiley's Baths, of course, which Minor Wiley's father built. Oh, that is the most beautiful place to swim, honestly. And that's where Harry Wiley, he encouraged mixed bathing. Trying to bring it up to the times a bit. I think the safety of swimming in an ocean bath, you know, you get the best of both worlds there. So you've got the wall protecting you from those huge waves, but you've also got that beautiful water. So that would have been gorgeous for Fanny, as well as for me, when Robin, I went there.
So Robin talks about how she was a mentor. Did Fanny herself have mentors or people that she looked up to?
She certainly would have looked up to Annette Kellerman. I think that Annette Kellerman would have been the sort of hero of both of them. And there was actually a photograph in the archive box, which one of them probably kept with her. And not just because she was such a fantastic swimmer, but also because she was very bold herself, Annette Kellerman. And, you know, in terms of, you know, what you were allowed to wear on the beach and so on, Annette Kellerman was, you know, arrested in America for her swimming costume and went to court. So so I think she would have been the hero.
We're joined this morning by Emily Gale, who's the co-writer of Elsewhere Girls, which is inspired in part by Australia's first female Olympic gold medalist, Fanny Durack. Emily, the significant and strong characters for young women, do we need to see more of those, or is it starting to balance now? If you took a look at some of the books ages ago, that there didn't seem to be that many. Is it starting to balance itself out?
Well, I think it is in terms of women. I think we've got quite a long way to go in terms of minorities, and you know, Australian publishing needs to sort of work a little bit faster on that. You know, Australian publishing is still very, very white, and the characters are still very white. So I think, you know, that's the thing that needs to change, really. But there have been some great books published about Australian women in recent years, and so that seems to be going well, so I'm pleased about that. But we would like to write some other time slip body swap books about Australian women.
But the great thing is, though, that again it comes down to strength of stories, and they're not necessarily, as we heard earlier from one of our listeners saying that they would love for their son to read these books, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're just made for young women.
Oh, absolutely. It's just as important. Just as important for boys to read these stories, of course. And we have lots of boy readers as well for all our books, even though Nova and I both usually have female main characters. We certainly have lots of male readers. I think it's a little bit of a myth that boys won't read stories about girls. that's often something that comes from some of the adults in their lives and not necessarily from the boys themselves.
It's changed a lot. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about Stockholm and her swimming in Stockholm.
Well, first of all, having such difficulty getting there in the first place, because both Minor and her had to fund their own passage to Stockholm. And so not only did they have the Olympics committee not on their side, they also had to come up with the money. And there was a big debate played out in the newspapers, and the public were absolutely behind Fanny and Minor going. And that's what swung it in the end. That's why they went.
But they didn't even have support from the New South swimming organisations.
No, they didn't. They didn't, because the women who ran that ladies' association, the feminists of the day, believed that women should not swim in front of men. That was the feminism of the day. So, yeah, they were fighting not only men who didn't want them to go to the Olympics, but also women who didn't want them to go to the Olympics.
So was it a modesty thing, like they didn't want women to be seen by swimming by men, or was it that it was considered to be masculine and not feminine to swim?
Not at all. They believed that women were great swimmers and really capable in the water, but they did not believe that men should see them, because they sort of had this idea in their minds that men couldn't control themselves when they saw a woman in a swimming costume. And, you know, rather than say men should be able to control themselves
exactly
when they see a woman in a swimming costume, you know, their take on it was, we'll just hide away from the men and have our own association, our own carnivals, and we simply won't get involved with the men.
Is that something that comes through when you're taking a look at your book and some of the obstacles that were faced by women then?
It is, because Kat, who's the modern girl, you know, her father is such an important part of her life and comes to all her races and is very involved. And, you know, Fanny, when she goes off to a carnival, you know, she says goodbye to her dad and her brothers, and they've never seen her swim. They're not involved in her life at all. So, but she did have her sisters, and they were all involved in the swimming scene as well. Even though they weren't swimmers, they got involved with organising the carnivals and really supporting Fanny that way.
When you take a look at Fanny's life, and especially that life in the pub, did that have a way of forming the person that she was as well, and especially coming from a big family?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the pub is in Surrey Hills. It's on the corner of Campbell and Elizabeth Street. And we went there. We had a beer there, Nova and I, as part of our research. Very important part after our swim. unfortunately, it's not the sawdust on the floor pub that it would have been in those days. It's now got a lot of pokey machines. So it wasn't quite the vision that we had in our minds. But of course, they lived above this pub and there were so many of them. And it was a very rowdy pub. You know, there are lots of great stories you can find if you dig hard enough. There was an armed robbery in 1912 in the pub, and that has actually made its way a little bit into the book.
When you're doing that, when you take a look at the amazing life that Fanny Durack had, how do you edit it? How do you work out which bits will work from her story and which bits you leave out?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard to leave out all of the wonderful things that you've unearthed. But the really important thing is for the reader to have this really clear passage through the book. And so you have to make that passage, you know, not too cluttered with every single bit of research you've found. So, you know, the great thing about working with a friend is that you nut it out together and you say, no, look, we can't include that, but we, you know, what about this? And you can, it's very, very different to writing a book by yourself.
Is there ever the temptation that you go, well, okay, this is a great story. Fanny Durack's a great story and you could tell it as a standalone story. You can change the name, but you could do it as a standalone story.
Change the Fanny Durack's name to something else.
Yeah, but you could tell that story by itself without doing the swapping and the changing.
Oh, you absolutely could. You could. I mean, you know, it would be tricky because we weren't able to track down any family members and there were not many children from that Durack line, actually. Quite a few of her siblings died young. And not many of them had children. So, and Fanny didn't have children. So the research was, you know, all from old newspapers and things like that. So, but it was great fun to do.
How we've spoken a little bit about the friendship that she had with Mina. How did that begin?
Well, Fanny loved to train in Coogee, of course, and that's where Mina Wiley lived. Lived right next to Wiley's Bath, in fact, and for a very long time. I think right probably up to her death, she lived at that house near Wiley's Baths. Mina was, I think, a couple of years younger than Fanny. And throughout the carnivals before the 1912 Olympics, you could never pick who was going to win. Mina was often ahead, or Fanny was ahead. So, and there were some other swimmers. There was Dorothy Hill as well. But I think she decided to go professional and and make a bit of money out of swimming.
Emily, as you do the research and you went through her story, were there things there that just amazed you when you first found out? And what was the main thing that you found out that perhaps you didn't know that you found so surprising or more surprising?
Well, look, the thing I love, which relates to the Olympics, is that Fanny and Mina, they were the only two women who went to the 1912 Olympics. And as I said, they paid for themselves. Now, so when they got there, obviously they were dominating. And then it came to the relay race, which, of course, Britain were entering. So Fanny and Mina said to the officials, well, look, we want to enter the relay, but there's only two of us. But we will swim twice.
Just serious?
Yeah. We will swim twice. How about that? And the official said, no, I'm sorry, that's not in the rules. And so as a result, guess who won the gold in the relay? It was Britain. So I thought as I watched the Olympics, the relay recently, which the female team in Australia won one of those, one gold in one of those, I thought, ah, that's what happens when you send four Australian girls to the Olympics instead of two. You get the gold.
So they couldn't even just find anybody to swim with them because they were the only two.
That's right. They paid for their own passage. They, you know, gone by boat with their chaperones. The Olympics team didn't particularly want them there. The men didn't want them there. And the officials didn't want them there either. So they were absolutely on their own. And significantly, in one of her interviews, Mina Wiley said, you know, Australia was very quick to claim us as the gold and silver medalists of those Olympics. But in fact, we got there, you know, by our own grit. So not sure they should have been quite so quick to say, oh, yes, oh, Fanny and Mina with their gold and silver medals.
Does that also show just how far behind we were in comparison to other countries?
You know, in that way, we were. I mean, very fast swimmers, but a little bit behind on the politics.
So true. I love the fact that they just said we'll swim twice.
Yeah, that was both of them. They were just these fantastic, gritty characters who were just up for it. And they were such strong swimmers, not just swimmers, but Fanny was also a diver. So, you know, she was jumping off these very high platforms as well. She was absolutely daring. Yeah.
Emily, thank you for telling us about it today. She is an amazing story, and what a great way to actually take a look at her life and incorporating it into your book. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Emily Gale, co-writer of Elsewhere Girls, which was inspired in part by the first Australian female gold medalist, Fanny Durack.